When the world is crap and you've got the blues, just take a break from all that horrible news for something crazy, amazingly clever and never half-assed.
Except when it is.
Yes, it's the Randy Rainbow Podcast. This song is almost over, girl, so wipe your tears. You're in for a treat and feast your ears on this remarkable feat. Yes, it's a famous celebrity finally podcasting.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Randy Rainbow Podcast. I'm your host, Vanessa Redgrave. I'll do a little backstage story. We just spent about 10 minutes coming up with who I would be on this episode of the podcast, because I like to say a random actress. And Riley, who's in studio with us, suggested Meryl Streep, but I scrapped it. I punched it up. Welcome. I'm here with my little crew, including the lovely and talented Rebecca.
Hello.
Well, we're officially in studio. I know we've been in studio for it's kind of confusing, I guess, to a listener.
It'll be clear soon. Don't worry.
All will be revealed. Just calm down. But we're kind of officially, unofficially in studio. Officially.
Officially.
Meaning that we will likely have some video accompanying this week's interview, which is very exciting because I happen to be very excited about today's subject, Billy Porter.
Yes.
Oh my God, I love him so much.
Very excited.
So how you doing, Rebecca? What's the latest?
My parents have been listening to the episodes, of course.
Oh God. And do they have notes for me?
Well, my father definitely has a note for me.
What is that?
He called and asked, is Into the Woods really your favorite musical? And I said, well, you know, it's one of them. I love musicals. There's a lot that I like. He's like, well, I have some suggestions for what your favorite musical should be.
I feel attacked. Why is he debating us on this?
But here's the thing. I get it because then he named all these musicals that I absolutely love that should be at the top of the list.
So wait a minute. Before you continue, this is not him disparaging Into the Woods or
not
Stephen Sondheim. He's calling into question, having known you for your life,
yes,
the authenticity of your answer.
Yeah.
Well, what does he
knew.
Say?
Well, he gave me a list. Rent, Cabaret,
okay.
West Side Story. And I said, yes. I mean, that's actually very true. Rent was the first Broadway musical I saw.
Okay.
So that holds a special place in my heart. And I know every word. Can I say I know every word of Into the Woods? No, not really. So he had a point. I'm just giving him credit where credit is due.
I love that he called you to the carpet.
West Side Story, I do love West Side Story, but that one's actually his favorite. That's the top of his list.
All right. I love that your dad is like Mama Rose.
Yeah, invested.
He's very invested in this topic. Well, I appreciate it. And Into the Woods, I'm on a kick with it because every stage of my life, that musical takes on a new meaning because every life lesson is baked into that pie.
That's true. I mean, I think it's why it comes to the forefront of my mind so much because it just has every life lesson you could need.
Well, Rebecca, now you're lying to me again. Just say Rent because your father's going to call in and we're going to really have it out. Don't get me wrong. Rent was a big one for me, too. I was sleeping outside. Well, that's another story. I didn't actually do the lottery for Rent. We happened to luck out in 1996 and just walked to the box office and they had tickets available. But that was when everyone was sleeping, like camping outside for days.
Oh, my gosh.
But I didn't have to do that.
Oh, see, I won the lottery.
Yeah.
It's one of those lucky ones. But it was, I mean, what an amazing experience.
Great time. The 90s in general. And this brings us to our guest today, Billy Porter, who I discovered in 1995, right around then, because of his part in the revival of Grease, the 1994 revival of Grease.
Wow.
I was obsessed with that soundtrack. I hate when people call it a soundtrack. It is a cast.
I was going to
recording.
Say.
That is my biggest pet peeve, and I just did it. I'm fired. But yeah, that was a big one for me, and he's a big one for me.
Yeah.
I love him.
It's the Randy Rainbow Podcast. Let's answer the phone.
Pick up.
Hello, Randy. This is Scott. I was at your show in Rochester, New York, and of course, you gave a fabulous performance. I drew a caricature of you and Tippi and left it with Pedro. I hope you got it and that you liked it. My question, when they do a biopic of your life as an award-winning major motion picture or a top-rated miniseries on Netflix, who do you think should play you? Personally, I think Chris Evans would be perfect. Thanks, Randy. Love you.
Hi, Scott. Thank you so much for coming to my show. Yes, I did get your beautiful caricature, and it was adorable. Thank you. Tippy loved it. She may have peed on it a little bit. Just kidding. Who would... Well, that's kind of very generous. Chris Evans?
Oh, yeah.
Gorgeous. Oh, I always get my Chris's confused. Chris Pine. We're going to bring it again back to Into the Woods. Chris Pine was Into the Woods, right?
Yes.
He sings. Chris Evans, I don't know. Chris Evans is Captain America.
Yes.
Well,
I believe we have the Chris's in order now.
Yeah, Chris Pine, I think I might be a better option because he's a singer.
I think that's a good one.
But if Chris Pine isn't too old to play me by the time they make this picture, why can't I play me, damn it?
Well, that's an interesting idea. Can you
damn
just
it.
Play yourself?
See,
your
even
own?
My fans won't cast me in my own movie. This is my problem, Rebecca. Who else jumps to mind?
Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep or Vanessa Redgrave.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm going to go with either... The natural progression. If Meryl Streep is not available, let's ask Vanessa Redgrave. And if she can't do it, Chris Pine.
Hello, Randy. This is Heather. And I just want to know, did Sean Hayes ever fix you up with a friend? Inquiring minds want to know.
Heather, thank you for your question. And the answer is a resounding no. I am still matchless. I don't know. Rebecca, you work with Sean on a regular basis. Has he brought it up? Is he planning? Is he maybe trying to find the perfect option for me? Is that why it's taking so long?
It's a good question. I'm very disappointed that he has not provided a list.
Let's go to Sean now. Let's bring him in via Zoom. Sean, no, we don't have the technology to do that.
I think we need to follow up with anyone who has offered this to the table to provide.
Yes, maybe we need your father to call in because he will call out some shit. And yeah, I feel people do this with me, especially these, God bless these mothers who come to my show and they say, if I got a boy for you, my son, I'm going to fix you up. Rebecca, they don't do it.
Time to deliver.
Let's go. Sean, I'm talking to you.
Hi, Randy. My friend Julie and I are huge fans of you and your work, and we're hoping to become best friends with you on the Broadway cruise in March. I have, though, fallen pregnant, and that means that I can't go on the cruise. Something about pregnancy and cruises not mixing, unclear. But this does mean that Julie has to find someone else to accompany her on the cruise. I'm really, really thrilled about the pregnancy, but I am truly devastated that I won't get to see you and the others on the cruise. I was hoping that you might help me break that news gently to Julie, as I know she does listen to your podcast, much like me. I would sure appreciate any help you might give. Thank you so much, dear heart. Your friend, Anna.
Hi, Julie. It's Randy. Listen, sweetie, I just got some news from our friend Anna, and I want you to have an open mind and an open heart when I tell you this. But apparently, Anna feels that her unborn child is more important than having a great time with you and I on a Broadway cruise in March. And so she has decided that she cannot join us. I want to say we should be understanding of Anna, but frankly, I think this is all bullshit. And I think that you should probably end the relationship immediately because we know where her priorities are. And they're not with you and me on a cruise ship. You and me and Kristen Chenoweth and Alan Cumming and Laura Benanti and a whole host of other Broadway greats. So, Julie, honey, it's just you and me. Batten down the hatches. Hey, if you want to leave me a message, ask me a question, or tell me something great, go to the show notes, click the link, and talk to me.
It's the Randy Rainbow Podcast.
And now, a word from our sponsor. Hello, friends. Randy Rainbow here, and one thing I never take for granted is the price of freedom of speech. And that price sits at just about $8. Blue check marks used to be free, but Elon thinks that blows. So Elon blew Twitter. Before Elon Musk took over Twitter, Twitter never blew. Now it totally does. It's an all-new subscription-based model that allows the content creators of Twitter to pay to verify their ability to create content for Twitter. All for the price of a midweek back alley handy. Before Twitter blew, users who engaged in hate speech, inciting violence, or using racial slurs were removed from the platform, even former reality show hosts. But now Twitter blues, and allows any user the ability to pay $8 a month to freely type the N-word like an NFL owner's email chain. It blues that hard. Before Twitter blew this much, users were unable to share unverified health advice during a global pandemic simply because it originated from an inebriated cage fighter. Before Twitter blew this much, there was a personal and professional price to pay for violating ethical terms and conditions. Now that price is just $8 a month. It's like suddenly having to pay to go to your favorite bar and the bar using that money to fire the bouncer and bring back Proud Boys karaoke night. Elon Musk blew Twitter, and it's only $8 a month to sit back, grab a towel, and watch the fun. It's not freedom of speech, it's freedom of tweets. Join Twitter Blue today.
That was really a kick, but enough of that skit. Time to drop all the shit now, so let's cut the shit. I think I'm fabulous, Kiki, with someone I love would be back.
Yes, who is it? It's time for a guest.
My guest today is a Grammy, Tony, and Emmy-winning superstar and still finds time to be a fashion icon and inspiration to all of us. He's been there, done that, worn that dress. It's the one and only Billy Porter.
Hi, Randy Rainbow.
Hi, Billy Porter.
Where's this set?
Honey, this is my closet.
It is.
I'm thinking of coming out of it. I wanted you to be here.
That's hilarious.
No, this is, Billy, this is the first time that I'm in this fancy studio in the heart of Times Square, and you're my first subject. I'm kind of nervous.
You're kidding.
No, this is, you are it.
Amazing.
The inauguration person is you.
Well, congratulations.
Thanks, sweetheart. I'm so happy to be with you. I love you so much.
I love you back.
No, thanks. Well, I want to bore you a little bit and talk about my love for you. Is that all right? Because I have loved you for so long. And, you know, I feel kind of, I feel very possessive of you. All these Johnny come latelys who kind of are just discovering you in the last decade or so. I'm like, wait a minute. I made you. But really, it's, you're one of those people who I remember very vividly. Obviously, it was the 1994 cast recording of Grease. And I remember being in my, I mean, how many times a day do you hear this from Queens?
Not many times a day anymore, but I do hear the Grease thing a lot.
Well, that was it for me. You know, I'm very young. And I was sitting in my 1986 Buick Century, which I named Tiffany after this singer, Tiffany. And I just remember the experience of hearing you for the first time and just thinking, "What? Holy shit." And it really just, it ignited something within me. It energized me in a way. And I thought, well, I'm never, you know, I'm not an idiot. I'm not going to be able to do what he does. But it made me want to try. It made me want to get on the ride and do something. So thank you for always being an inspiration to me. And thank you for that energy.
Oh, you're sweet.
Well, it's very true.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. You were in multiple places on my closet in high school. Yes, it's true. So I love you. And my first question to you is, how do you maintain the joy, your balance in this wave of bullshit that we're in right now?
I can't say that I'm managing it so well.
Okay, good. Me neither.
Some days are better than others. I had a panic attack this morning.
Okay.
You know, I don't know. Sometimes I'm fine and sometimes I'm not. And I put one foot in front of the other. I meditate, I do my therapy, and I just try to be present in the moment. And sometimes I'm really successful, and sometimes I'm not. Just like everybody else.
Is meditate, because my mother always is hawking me to meditate, and I don't do it. But I probably should. Of all people on the earth, I need to meditate. Is that helpful for you?
Yeah, but meditation can mean many things.
What is it for
I'm
you?
I'm not always, it depends on the day. I'm not always sitting and going, namaste. It's not always that.
Oh, good.
You know, sometimes it's me writing in my journal. Sometimes it's, you know, recently it's me taking myself on an artist date.
What's that?
And going to see, so, you know, and I did this book called The Artist Way 20 years ago. And she says, you know, you have to take yourself out on artist dates to refill the well. And I do that for myself, especially now that we're back.
Is that like seeing theater and things like that, going to a museum?
Seeing theater, go to a movie, go to a museum.
Yeah.
You know, something like that, that allows for my brain, because we're creative people, so it allows for my brain to breathe.
Yeah. Well, that's so important. You talk, I think, in your book, which is now in paperback, we should say, Unprotected.
Yes!
Congratulations. You talk about how important that the art has been, how it's a lifesaver. I totally understand that, but what do you mean by it?
You know, I've really used my art to heal my trauma. It's a constant journey. Art is healing. It always has been. And I'm grateful to have always had it, because it has allowed for me to have some semblance of sanity in my 50s and presence. And just sort of every day, like, get up and face the world. Just get up. I know the consistency of my art in my life has helped me be able to do that.
You also talk about, well, I think you mentioned that Ryan Murphy was on your vision board. And I know that he's played a large part in your career, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But what is that an important practice to you, visualization and all of that? And how so?
I am a visualizer.
I believe it works, yeah.
A law of attraction person. Words have power, and you speak life into yourself. And I try to surround myself with like-minded people, because it is true.
Yeah.
And it works both ways. It works all the ways. Look at Orangina 45. He speaks life into himself and attracts it.
What did you,
he Orangina. Does. Call him what you want, but he believes in himself.
Yeah.
He believes in himself.
That's so true. Whatever the hell he's doing, say what you will, it's fucking working to our detriment.
Say what you will. He believes in himself. And I speak life into myself just like that white man does. And it works.
But it works when you do it. It's something that we can enjoy and is not going to
kill us. Yeah. Okay. Yes. But what I'm saying to the world is, it works. Speak
really
life
does.
Into yourself.
I'm talking about your, you know, Ryan Murphy and the success that you're having now. I mean, what is it like experiencing it from the inside? Because to the average fan of yours, the outside viewer, you've always had a great career. You've always been respected and you've always worked, it seems. But now, you know, you've catapulted into the stratosphere. Are you enjoying it and having as much fun with it as I hope you are?
Yeah. I'm enjoying it about 75% of the time.
What does that mean?
Just, I'm a black gay man in America, in this world. Everything about me is under attack. Every person I know is under attack. The world is imploding. And I'm having the greatest success of my life. That's hard to balance. I'm an empath. I am a political person. I hate it when people say today, I'm not political. We don't have time for that.
Right.
We don't. And the reason why we're where we are is because so many people have taken our freedoms for granted by not being political. It's, you know, 75% is actively me choosing joy in the face.
Right.
Of
whatever the hell this is.
Whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, but I have practiced at it because I've been gay since 1985. Right. So I already had to do this during the AIDS crisis. So that muscle is strong.
That's interesting. I relate to that so deeply because I started having success when I started becoming more politically, you know, when my humor and musical satire, whatever it is,
started
becoming more politically aimed. And so I've had this weird sort of thing of like, oh, wow, things are going great for me in my career. And also it's I can't ignore the fact that it's, you know, it has a lot to do with what's going on in the world, which is all negative.
All of it is not negative. I have to push back there.
Please do.
I have to push back there. That's another problem. It's not all negative. Our news sources are money-making vehicles now. It's their job to have high ratings. High ratings come from negativity. If it bleeds, it leads. There's a lot of good shit going on in this world today that we do not see on the news.
Right.
The Biden administration is doing remarkable work and nobody talks about it. That's a problem.
You're absolutely right. No, it's shifting the whole perspective, and that changes everything. That changes the energy of the earth. But I guess what I mean is that, you know, my stuff has been so directly attached to the negative stuff in the news.
Yeah.
You know
but
what I mean.
But you're the positive light.
That's what I was getting
you're
to.
You're the positive
I'm
light.
Great. Thank you for bringing it back to how great I am.
No, but for real, Randy, for real, the satire is necessary.
Yes.
The satire is what brings us back to the truth that love always wins.
Yes. And it also something that you say often, which is how you learn to be of service, or how this was sort of,
yeah,
this over the, yeah, last few years has been a revelation for me, because when I start, again, I'm just going to talk about me the whole time, but it relates back to you. When I first started doing this, it was just to sort of, you know, I put myself on YouTube to be an audition tape. And so people would cast me, and it was all career based. And as I started, mm-hmm, doing it, I found more of a purpose for it.
Yeah.
As it took aim at these subjects that people are trying to cope with, it really shifted my perspective and let me sort of realize, oh, there is a real purpose to what I'm doing. And that reinvigorated my whole thing. Because the showbiz aspect of it, especially nowadays, it seems like a lot of empty calories to just, you know, be adorable all the time for no good reason. But being of service, which you talk about a lot, is now sort of how I look at everything I do.
Absolutely.
How is that a revelation for you, or was it?
It was watching Oprah, and you know, many years ago, decades ago, and she had on Maya Angelou and a Yala Van Sant, and they were talking about service. You know, and they said, when you shift your intention to service, the universe will work everything else out. And so I asked myself the question, how can I be of service? What does that mean? In a world, in an industry particularly, and in a world that's inherently narcissistic. And it hit me like a ton of bricks. It's your queerness. It's everything that everybody is telling you is your liability. And I was in the middle of that being true. I was in the middle of the decades where my queerness was my liability. And I was like, Lord, what? Okay. All right. Well, I guess I'll just lean into it and let the chips fall where they may. And I never could have imagined the life that I have right now. My dreams were always huge. And they were always springboarded off of things that I had already seen. Off of archetypes that I had already seen. I was trying to be the first Black .. Not the first, period. I didn't know how to dream that. You know, when you don't see a representation of yourself, sometimes it's hard to dream beyond your circumstance or beyond what it is that you see in front of you, which is about assimilating to what white people do. So I could push myself over the edge. Whether it was the MC in Cabaret, whether it was Jean Valjean and Le Mis, whether it was anything in Into the Woods. You know, just I'm being very specific right now. Yeah. You know, in those moments for me, I never could have imagined that my queerness would be my superpower. That the reason that people want me is because of my truth and my authenticity. That makes so many people uncomfortable in this world.
Yeah. Well, selfishly, I mentioned Bernadette Peters at the top because I just love the story. And I know you just told it on Corden. That damn James Corden steals everything. He's stolen four Emmys from me and this story from Billy Porter. But damn it, I'm going to get it out of you because I love when you tell this story about your audition for Into the Woods. And
yeah.
Would you please?
Yeah. You know, I'm a Sondheim freak, aficionado, lover. When I came out, Black people were not in Sondheim shows. People of color were not in Sondheim shows. You know, Tanya Pinkins was in the ensemble of Merrily We Roll Along. And I came up at Terry Burrell was a stepsister replacement in the original Into the Woods. Yeah. And Mrs. Huxtable, Felicia Rashad, replaced Bernadette Peters. And I came up to see her, and that was the moment where I realized it actually isn't about Black and white. That's a part of it. But more, it's more about green. Felicia Rashad was green. Felicia Rashad was Mrs. Huxtable. Felicia Rashad put butts in the seats. So at a very early age, I knew I had to turn green. Mm-hmm. I had to make myself green. So that I could do the things that I wanted to do.
Right. And you did.
And so I'm a part of the generation that was kicking that door down and going to all of those auditions where I knew nobody was ever going to hire me. And so the revival in 2001, that was auditioning in 2000, I went in for the Baker. You know, because I was in this space of trying to like, you know, I'm more than my voice. I'm more than my voice. I'm an actor. I can, you know, you know, now 20 years later, you know, I go online and read things about, oh, I didn't know Pray Tell could sing. But at that time, you know, first of all, Pray Tell is not my name. And singing is the actual gift from on high, right? So I had already been pigeonholed into being a clown. In my book, I call it the Millennium Coon Show. And I knew that I studied at Carnegie Mellon. I studied classical drama. Like, just give me the audition. And so through a lot of stress, I finally just got an audition. And I went in and sang the Baker for the Baker. And, you know, none of that shit is in the right key. It's all too low for me. So I literally like sung the whole song. Like I did a full on Rex Harrison.
Oh dear. Which song was it? Do you remember?
No more questions, please. No more tests. Comes the day you say what for, please. No more. That's the only sound I can get because it's so low in my voice. It doesn't get any bigger than that.
Right.
And I just sat in my and I delivered it. And James LePine was like, wow. And he had worked with me on something else. We had worked together on some Randy Newman project. So he knew who I was. But nobody knew I could act. And nobody was interested. And because I didn't rearrange it so that I could shine, which was what I was doing. I was personalizing everything. I was changing the keys. I was going in and serving up my best self. I made the decision to try to fit in to the status quo. And he said to me, that was an extraordinary performance. That was an extraordinary audition. I didn't know that you could act that way. I didn't know that you could act like that. Bravo. And I was gathering my shit to go because that's all I cared about. I was just trying to change the perception of me.
Right.
And he said, no, wait, hold up. Like, you know, I've really been thinking about what we could do differently. And one of the things I've been pondering is like making the witch a man. I said, bitch, don't play with me. And I said it just like that. I was like, don't play with me. He's like, no, I'm serious. I was like, that's like one of my biggest dreams. Please don't blame me.
And how forward-thinking of James Lapine, too. I mean, what a brilliant idea.
Yeah, and he said, well, you know, I wrote it, so I can make it whatever I want. Famous last words.
Mm.
So he says to me, well, why don't you take the material and come back in a couple of days? We're here for a couple of days. We're doing callbacks in a couple of days. I said, I don't need to come back. He was like, well, I need you to sing the witch's material. I know it. He was like, okay. I said, just give me, you know, 10 minutes to read the sides and I'll just come back in and do it. And I came back in and sang Last Midnight in Bernadette's key.
Bitch.
And two callbacks later, flying me, because I was living in LA at the time, flying me to New York twice, the producers and the creators were in a deadlock. And I heard about it and I wrote that campaign letter. You know, that letter like, the future of the American theater depends on decisions like this, diversity, blah, 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 all this stuff. James Lapine called me. I got home from an Atlantis cruise on the 10th of September, 2001, to a message from James Lapine that said, yes, you know, we are trying to figure this out. You're number one. Don't worry about it. Don't take any other work. Rehearsals start December 13th. The next day, September 11th happened. And I never heard from any of those people again.
What do you make of that? What is the reason that why didn't you hear from them again?
September 11th happened. The World Trade Tower collapsed. And nobody was interested in taking any chances.
Okay.
Right. Who was going to spend money on a chance like that?
Right.
In 2001. And I understand it. I get it.
Yeah. Everyone wanted to be as safe as possible in those days.
Absolutely. I get it.
Yeah.
You know, we were just trying to get back. You know, but then now I go and I watch The Revival, which is all Monte Conti.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't stop weeping.
Why? I'm weeping because I want you in it.
It's okay. But to sit and watch and know that I was part of the generation that kicked that fucking door down.
Yes.
And made that change in this world.
Without
you
question.
You can't do it like you did it before.
Right.
You know, I just couldn't stop crying.
Yeah.
Patina Miller is my student. You know, an Asian Cinderella.
Yeah.
You know, Black Princess. Like,
no, it's amazing. And you are certainly, I mean, you deserve all the credit in the world for that. You were at the forefront of that movement. Absolutely. But as a fan, I still want you in it. I feel like you could just make a call and do that now. Can we get in?
Listen.
Can we
listen,
do it?
I'm on TV now.
I know you're busy, that's probably, but if you want
to— I'm in films now. Now, you know, Patina only does the weekends.
Oh.
Because she's on a TV show. So, you know, if they want to extend and they let me do it for a month, I'll definitely come
really?
In.
Come on. This is
totally.
If you're game, see, I thought maybe they offered it already to you after hearing the story.
Offer shit to me.
This is bullshit.
Listen, if they ask me to do it, they get 2 to 4 weeks, because I've been seeing people go in and replace for 2 weeks. Cheyenne Jackson was there for 2 weeks. So-and-so, Sebastian R. Coolis was there, if that's how you say his name, for 3 weeks. No, I'll do it for that amount of time.
This has to happen. Oh, I'm so thrilled. Talk to me. I want to let you go soon, but I just want to talk about your fashion. Because back in the old days when I, you know, used to watch every appearance that you made, maybe I'm wrong, you were, dare I say, the more casual Billy.
No, it was actually the antithesis of casual because it was churchy.
Okay.
It actually was rooted in the church. So I was wearing suits. My favorite time of year in the Black church was to get my Easter suit and my Christmas suit every year.
No, listen, that Billy, you always looked gorgeous, but I'm saying you weren't the style icon that we now see on the red carpet of the Met Gala. Certainly wasn't that.
Right. Because I had to evolve.
There you go. So was that always sort of gurgling beneath the surface, or is this another new part of it?
I knew that fashion was a part of it.
Yeah.
I knew that fashion, A, was a part of me growing up first generation post-civil rights movement. You know, we were taught first impressions of what you look like, which is why if you look at all that shit, Black men were always in suits. Black women were always in dresses when they had to present somewhere. Being queer, then moving into this business, I started seeing how the women, the world that was open to them, and the commerce as it relates to that in the business, red carpet stuff, that didn't exist for the men. It was always just, you know, the penguin suit, the same old boring penguin suit.
Right.
And it was interesting because, speaking of manifestation, words have power even when you're not conscious of it. When I was in college and we would do Oscar parties, you know, I would just joke, I'm wearing a gown to the Oscars when I go. I am not wearing that penguin suit. I'm wearing a gown to the Oscars when I go. And I'm going to look snatched. Joking.
You were joking, but was there some deeper part of you that really believed that you would?
No.
No. Oh.
Not at that time.
Yeah.
Not at that time until I got the call to do the ABC red carpet. And then I remembered. I was stressing out about what I was going to wear. And then I remembered. Oh, my fucking God. And a few years prior, Idina Menzel had her name said wrong. And the businessman in me said, somebody needs to say my name wrong at the Oscars, metaphorically. And so when I got that call, I was like, who the fuck is going to say my name wrong? Because this is the Super Bowl of the entertainment. Who's going to do that? Yes. What is that going to be? And you got the idea of the tuxedo dress. And that's when it all sort of took off. And even then, I didn't realize I was just being me. So the beauty of it is that it's so organic. It happened so organically that it's some of the funnest times I have because I'm literally just being me.
Yeah.
I'm and just literally leaning into like what I like and I'm just going to do that.
And it's fabulous. And you can tell it's so joyful. And that transmits. I mean, that permeates, you know, through the screen, that joy.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank
you. Oh, you're so fabulous. How's your husband, Adam?
My husband is great.
How long have you been together? A while?
8 years over like a 13-year period. We dated in 2009, then broke up for like 5.
Oh.
And then got back together. He has a new swimwear line out.
I saw it. It's gorgeous. He hasn't sent me any samples, but that's fine.
We'll send you a sample.
Well, let's go.
We will do that. Called the Smith Society. It's really, really beautiful, really special. And go buy my book.
Girl, your book is so amazing. I just want to ask you, because I wrote a book too, Billy.
Do you have it?
Yeah. Just shortly after you did. With the process of writing, because this is so personal, was it? I was surprised by how emotionally draining it was, the writing of it. Did you find that?
It was draining.
Yeah.
It was really draining. It was processing trauma. And that's the whole point of the book, was to say, you know, to show how I've spent my life and my trauma, my art healing trauma, and setting myself free and learning how to love myself. And hopefully inside of my journey, other people can be set free as well.
Well, I'm sure it will help a lot of people do that. It's a beautiful, beautiful book. I'll let you go, but I'm just going to remind you, the first time I met you was at the reading for of the Laramie Project. I don't know if you remember. And when I...
Yes, was and that when the I, first time?
That was the first time
I met you. And I kind of fangirled over you.
Yes, you did. But more importantly, I got you to agree, and I will say it now in front of my fans, that you agreed to maybe collaborate with me one day, and I'm going to hold you to that, damn it.
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Absolutely. Write a little, you know, parody thing for us and we'll do it together.
Girl, we're doing it. We're doing it.
I'm good at satire.
Honey, I have no questions about your abilities across the board. I love you. Thank you for the joy and inspiration you bring me and millions of people. I adore you. Thank you.
Thank you. I adore you too.
Thanks, honey.
Baby.
I'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Bye.
And now the show is over, girl, so thanks for listening. It's been a vibe, and damn it, don't you dare forget to subscribe. I promise next week will be 10 times better than even the last. Except when it's not. If you take all my heroes and then put them in order, at the top of that list is surely you, Billy Porter. And that's the last word of